Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I am Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday morning. A little bit overcast. It's going to get up into the upper 80s this afternoon. But you chill as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City. Fun show planned for you this afternoon. This afternoon. It's after 12 o'clock noon. As you join us, we're going to journey out to, Parkville, Missouri. Out by the, where, in fact, we just passed the anniversary of that flood, didn't we, not too long ago? Okay. Where the streets of Parkville were filled with water, and the Bell Road Barn in Riverside was completely wiped out.
Completely under it.
way back in those days. The Bell Road Barn is back. They're here with us today. They are going to talk about their show, The 39 Steps. If you remember, it was a Hitchcock movie way back when. And it's a little different. This version is a little bit different from the Hitchcock version. We're going to talk about that with me to tell us all about The 39 Steps from the Bell Road Barn Players. Matt Hinches is with us. He is the director. He has been involved with City Theater of Independence, The Bell Road Barn. Anything, name a few other things, and it's probably more than that.
Bell Road is the main, my main treading grounds, but okay. I've done stuff in Leavenworth at the River City. I believe I did a show at the Barn once, and then City Theater. Yeah.
It's a competition between the two barns as to what is the oldest community theater.
It's a close race, but we're winning. it might only be a few matter of months, but we'll take it.
It's the 65th anniversary.
Well, next
the Bell Road Barn.
Next year will be our 65th anniversary, the 2019.
Yeah. So. Well, and as I jokingly said earlier, and it was not a joke at the time, they were at the barn. There actually was a barn on Bell Road. That's why it is called that. Justin David's farm on Bell Road, and he is the founder. The theater now on the campus is called the Justin David Theater.
Jenkins David.
Jenkins David Theater.
I always joke with the audience at our curtain speeches. I'm like, I'm going to give you a brief history of the Bell Road barn here. Once there was a theater in a barn on Bell Road.
And they actually did shows there in a small space. They moved later to Riverside, and as I jokingly said, and it really wasn't funny at the time, the flood took out that building entirely. So they lost costumes, everything. It was a hard road back. They appeared at other things. I remember seeing a show at one of the high schools and one of the Park near
right.
high schools.
Yeah.
And at the
Legion Hall.
Jenkins David Theater, which is on the where it should have been all along because Jenkins David was a professor of theater at Park University.
Correct.
And that's where it should be all along. But they're back, and they are doing The 39 Steps. Was a Hitchcock film, but this is a little different. Also with us, some members of the cast, and they get a workout during this show. Jay Fullerton is with us. He plays the role of Richard Haney. He has appeared at the White Theater with the regular Barn Players, Okta, City Theater of Independence, Leawood Stage Company. Anything others you can think about?
Not that I can remember. Okay. It's all a blur.
Probably so.
Just a drunken haze.
Jeremy Walter is with us as well. He is a clown?
Shh, that's a secret.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I play a clown in this, but not in the traditional Barnum Ringling Brothers type thing with the face paint. That's just the title of the character in here. I play 14 different characters as, quote, the clown, unquote.
Well, that sounds like it could be difficult. He has appeared also with City Theater. A lot of these guys have done the City Theater route with probably the smallest stage in town, the Corbin Theater of Liberty.
It's only the widest. So, yes.
The widest?
It's very wide.
It's very wide.
And very shallow.
Very shallow. So. And also with the Bell Road Barn.
Yes. And I've also remembered I did the Summit Theater Group as well in Lee Summit and at Longview as well.
Oh, yeah.
So
me yeah. too.
You too. I know. Sorry, Lee Summit. We love you.
We love you.
Welcome, all of you. Who got the idea to turn this Hitchcockian-type film into a stage play, but with a completely different twist, although the storyline is the same?
Yeah, so Patrick Barlow is the gentleman who adapted this. The original screenplay was by Alfred Hitchcock. There was a book before that by John Buchan. It's a nonstop mystery spy thriller. this play that we're putting on is actually a pretty much a direct replication of the movie, for the most part, scene by scene, character by character. Oh,
yeah. Almost line for line in some scenes.
Yeah,
they're line for line.
Yeah,
line.
So you know, if anybody's planning on coming to see it, they can do a little bit of homework and watch the 1935 film before they come, and then compare and contrast, and we can, you know, have a session where we talk about the
similarities and differences and.
But in our production, we do it all with only four actors. Now, Dave has the easiest part. He only gets to play one character.
But with all the lines.
And then the other three actors, Jeremy, who's here with us, Patrick Peterson, and Michelle Fullerton, they play all of the other characters in the movie, upwards of, 100 different characters all together. So.
Is that a directing nightmare to get all of this together?
To work with Jeremy, yes, it is a directing nightmare. Matt has regretted it ever since he cast me.
Always. It takes a lot of coordination and spreadsheets, and yes, it was definitely a challenge. More of a challenge is figuring out where to put all of the stuff backstage. So what the audience sees is very, very flowing and very fluid and things coming on and off, but what they don't see is people climbing over sofas
the swan's
and set pieces.
Feet below the surface just going crazy paddling along.
Okay, this might be a good time. There is a storyline. It's the same as the movie, but refresh their memories as to the basic storyline. Who wants to take that?
Well, it's a spy story, and it was written as a book, it was a spy story, and Alfred Hitchcock did a little bit of a different kind of take on it. Obviously, the times had changed. I think the book was written around 1915.
Correct.
And then the movie was made in 1935, and so the story changed a little bit to fit more modern times there. This guy is in a theater, and he meets this mysterious German woman, and she shoots a gun in the theater, and everybody panics and runs out, and she says, "Can I come home with you?" And he's like,
"Well,
okay."
That happens to me all the pickup line. I know.
Yeah, yeah, then she gets murdered in his apartment, and then he gets kind of accused of the murder, and he's on the run, and he's trying to prove his innocence. And he runs. There's this network of spies that are behind all of this, and so he's got to expose the spies in order to clear his name. And that, that's probably a
through
good
no app. Fault of his own. He is wrapped into a deep web of espionage and intrigue. Yes.
Yours is different from the movie in what respect? There's more comedy in it. There's a lot of physical comedy.
There is all of the comedy.
Yes, I weighed 300 pounds before rehearsal started. I'm down to a svelte 160 now.
Well, good.
So,
you're looking good.
I did not. But it feels like it, just in losing in, I'm going to say, body fluids alone, just sweating all over the stage, changing and everything. So, yes, it is physically daunting. But we are certainly up to the task.
There's lots of comedy. A lot of it is sort of Hitchcockian inside jokes, so there'll be a lot of references to other Hitchcock films. And then there's a lot of, inside jokes from the theater perspective. So the great thing about the piece is that it really showcases and celebrates everything that's great about theater, the creativity, the imagination of just creating something out of nothing. It's a very inventive and creative show, and that's what I love about it so much.
In true Hitchcockian tradition, does the director make a cameo appearance in the show?
No, we got to work that in.
We have plenty of time to do that.
Not unless you look up into the sound booth.
A lot of physical comedy, as I recall.
And characterizations. Not me, not Richard Haney, but so much, but the guys that play all these other characters, some of them in drag, their characterizations are a big part of what makes it funny.
Yes.
Yeah, well, some examples of the physical comedy. Just a few things. Don't relate them to the mystery, of course.
Oh, indeed not.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. There is a train, a chase on a train, literally on top of a train, where you climb outside the window onto a train. You have to visualize this and use a little bit of your own imagination for that, and also hanging across a bridge over a fathomless drop down. There's most of the, actually thinking about it, most of the physical action takes place backstage, trying to get into your costumes, trying to get prepared for where you're going to be, and then when you're on stage, it's going to be as smooth as possible.
And some of the costume changes are on stage.
On stage.
Have to take place on stage because, well,
yeah.
Because
yeah,
they're just so fast.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, I get to do 5 different characters on four pages. Thanks, Matt. I love you.
You're welcome.
So, yes. Other physical things. I think that's it.
Well, the difficulty of doing... How much time do you have to go, for instance, from one voice to another? I'll bet
sometimes it's on stage. Sometimes it's literally just a line, and there, uh-huh. and you go from your posh British accent to you got to be German, and you got to be a tense, and it just happens on stage right there. Sometimes you got to be Scottish. You got to be. I don't want to spoil all the other characters that we do because you need to come to the show and see everything we do. There's it's not just British.
There's a number of scenes where Patrick and Jeremy are two clown actors where they portray upwards of 15, 20 characters in the matter of a mere couple minutes. Yes. So just changing back and forth, yes. just with voices and mannerisms. It's a really fun experience from the audience perspective, and I think from the acting
Most
perspective.
Most definitely. That's why I wanted to do the show, because of the challenge of it. Well, I wanted to see if I was up to the challenge, and obviously I am not. It's a big disaster.
How many different voices?
Oh, dear.
Did you ever count?
Well, 14 different characters. Hopefully they're all distinguishable. Unfortunately, we do not have the man of 1,000 voices here, Patrick Peterson, who plays the other clown. Not to be confused with the Arizona Cardinal cornerback, Patrick Peterson, the Pro Bowler. This is a completely different human being.
He wasn't available.
He wasn't available. Yeah,
they're starting the football guy. Camp,
yeah. I know, they're too busy for that. But no, Patrick can do any voice under the sun, just in the flick of a finger. So yeah, he is amazing.
Did you cast with this in mind? I assume you had to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How many different voices can you do?
Okay. Myself?
No.
I was like, none. That's why I'm directing.
Is this one of the questions you ask at the auditions?
At the auditions, yeah. I had them read some out-of-the-blue kind of weird scenes and gave them some weird direction right off the bat just to see how creative they were on the spot. So it's while it is all scripted, improv skills definitely do come in handy for this piece.
You want to tell us?
Because things will invariably go wrong, and we'll have to work around them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you want to tell how you punked us in the casting?
as indicated, the clowns played multiple roles, excuse me. And so when I called Jeremy and Patrick, I was like, I want to thank you for auditioning. Unfortunately, at this time, I do not have a role to offer you.
And I gave it a beat.
And then I was like, I have multiple roles to offer you.
You son of a... So, yes. Yes. So...
So lots of action going on there.
Oh, my. Constant. Oh,
yeah. Constant. Yeah, there's gunfire. There's gunplay. There's fisticuffs.
At least 3 gunshots, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. fisticuffs. Yep. There's fights. There's...
That's what you like.
No, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what the campus police love, those gunshots.
I know. Yeah.
Well, it comes from the direction of the theater, though. They probably pay it mm-hmm. no mind whatsoever. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, yes. There's fight sequences. There's chase scenes.
Yeah.
But... Then there's also the layers of romance that we throw in there.
And sex.
Is she an icy blonde in true Hitchcockian tradition?
Talking about Patrick?
Yes. She's a blonde, a redhead, and a brunette.
Ah. The gamut.
And she's my wife.
Hitchcock had a thing for icy blondes. If you look back over his films, he did.
Yes, and she is the main love interest. The other two are just, you know... Passing fancies.
Yeah. Ships in the night.
Yes, a passing fancy. We're speaking with Matt Hinches, Dave Fullerton, and Jeremy Walter. Matt's the director, and the two actors all participating in the Bell Road Barn Players production of The 39 Steps, opening this Friday, July 27th, at the Bell Road Barn Theater, which is on the campus of Park University in Parkville Theater, the Jenkin David Theater. Performances continue then on Saturday the 28th at 7:30, a matinee on Sunday the 9th at 2 o'clock p.m., then another weekend as well. Friday the 3rd, Saturday the 4th, and a matinee then on Sunday the 5th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Bell Road Barn. Within the campus of Park University, 8700 Northwest River Park Drive, Parkville, Missouri. If you MapQuest things, you need the zip code 64152. We're speaking with the guys. Do we try to keep it as period as we can?
Well, absolutely. Back to the information, though, just so everyone knows, the David Theater is what the theater is called, but it's in Alumni Hall, which as you enter the campus, the only directional signs you will see is to Alumni Hall. So it's the David Theater in Alumni Hall on the campus of Park University.
where Mr. David actually directed plays.
Absolutely. Right. Our founding member of Bell Road, Jenk and David, the theater is named after him and his wife, and so another reason why we kind of consider it our home, and we're really happy to be back there doing theater.
We should have been there when the founder teaches at Park University. Of course, it should be
right. Yeah. But no, to your previous question, yeah, we want to keep everything period. The 30s is one of my favorite time periods, and so we do our best from a costume, prop, and everything to keep it that way. But being a farcical slapstick comedy, you'll still get some present day references.
Consider the time period in the 30s. World War I was passed, but the storm clouds were already forming for World War II, even in the 30s. So there was a lot of fear. So if you have a German shooting a pistol, for instance, there would be room for fear.
Indeed, there. Oh, most definitely. Yep, they were on the rise then, and planning the global domination, and we have to thwart them. And our hero here, Richard Hannay, does his best to thwart them. Yeah, in the play itself.
How do you get involved in all of this? How does your character...
Well, it's that sexy involved. German woman who comes into my apartment. Huh? Yeah. What do I do about it?
Yes, I know. It happens all the time, like on a other weekly basis for you, Dave.
It's always a woman, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
What about costumes? Is it hard to be period with all those costumes?
Oh, yeah, and especially as many as we have. So the way we work it with the clowns is that they have a base costume, and then, you know, one second they maybe in a three-piece suit, and then they run off stage, and we throw a different hat on them, maybe a mustache or a cape or a cloak or something. They come back on, do another character, run back off, and then one of them might have to put on a dress and a wig.
That's not even part of the show. That's just for fun later. So,
crazy party.
That's the cast party right there.
Oh, yeah. The Bell Road Barn has a fine tradition. I mean, they do... They've done quilters a number of times over the years. I guess they started out doing the Grover's Corners.
Our town. That's our staple, and we're bringing it back for our 65th season. Actually,
how many times have they done it over the years?
You stumped.
Probably 60 out of the 65.
Years. Oh no! The last time we did it was for our 50th anniversary. So let's average, you know, every 15 years maybe.
Yeah, a fine tradition. Speaking with the guys from the show, the theater's been, at least it said in my notes, it said the 65th anniversary season.
Which is next season. So right now we're just wrapping up our 64th season. So starting the fall of 2018 will be our 65th season.
What are you planning for the big 65?
Well, we're going to...
Medicare and Social Security. Yeah. Yeah.
For all the people who've ever acted there.
There we go. Yeah. Exactly. So we're going to kick off the season with a fundraiser kickoff event, a one-night-only thing on Saturday, October 13th. It's going to be, like I said, a fundraiser kickoff for our 65th season. There'll be drinks, dinner, and entertainment, and that'll be at the Legion Hall. Then our first show of the season is actually going to be a Bell Road original called Awkward Christmas. It'll be that middle week of December, and it's a collection of pieces by entirely all local playwrights. So we're really excited and proud about that. But basically, it's a evening of stories inspired by awkward Christmas photos. so that'll be a fun, interesting experience. Then in the spring, we'll be doing our fan favorite, Our Town, to celebrate our 65th season. And then we finish the season off next summer, about the same time, with Boeing, a door-slamming comedy, and Agatha Christie's A Murder Is Announced.
Well, fine season. Known for the mysteries. I was in a version of Sherlock Holmes years ago. A nice mix of things.
Yeah. You like to keep some variety, a little bit of something for everyone. So
I remember seeing A Streetcar Named Desire.
Great show.
Great show. It really was.
Yeah. So we like to keep going to try and keep it fresh continually. Try and incorporate something classic, something maybe more modern, and definitely something original. And if we can incorporate local artists into it, local playwrights, and kind of highlight the talent that we have here in Kansas City.
Sure.
No reason not to.
And could you do it in the anniversary season as well?
Yeah.
And the many places that they've had to be. That flood just wiped them out. I'm sure the veterans would agree with me. As I understand it, all the costumes, and they had many costumes, that was destroyed.
Yeah.
In fact, the whole building went down. I remember driving past that once, sometime after the waters resided, and the building was not there at all.
No.
It had already been knocked down, which led to finding a whole new home, which is a problem. Yeah.
Always a challenge, yeah.
Always a challenge in areas like that. The most dangerous thing you have to do in the show. What is it? Is there anything that gets you fearful?
Be on stage with my other clown, Patrick Peterson, because I have to maintain a straight face the entire time. And I don't think we've done that yet, but hopefully by our opening night that we won't crack each other up, because that's all we've been doing on stage. So we have to, that's the most dangerous thing, because he's a dangerous actor.
He is. He almost took my head off.
Literally dangerous.
Yes.
Do you have a... What are your future plans? Do you have a more safer role in mind for yourself coming up? Anything in the offing for you?
Yes, I have recently been cast in the City Theater of Independence, The Hollow, which, don't ask me the dates, it's like September 1st, 2 weekends in September, I believe. Mm-hmm. So that's an Agatha Christie mystery, and it is, you'll never guess who did it. Never. You have to come see the show to guess who did it.
The butler.
Man, get out of here!
What about Dave?
I've been cast in The Rock of Ages at the normal barn players.
Hey, now.
That's what he called it, so I'm just following.
Well, when there's two barn players, you have to differentiate for the folks.
Yes, and I'll be the bad guy in that show, the German property developer named Hertz.
Yeah, these shows are anti-German, aren't they?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know.
What about Matt?
I will be taking a very long nap.
You are?
This production.
He needs it.
But I'll be working on our October fundraiser, and then again on Awkward Christmas.
Hey, so. Can you remember when the dates in October are?
It's Saturday, October 13th is our kickoff season event for Bell Road 65th season.
And they can find out if they go to your website, bellroadbarn.com.
org.
.org. Do you also have a Facebook page?
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook and on Instagram at Bell. Just search for Bell Road Barn Players. If you follow us on both those platforms, you'll get to see all the crazy shenanigans that go on backstage. We try and take pictures whenever we have downtime, which isn't
we never have
often,
downtime.
But we try and take pictures of backstage and from backstage, and every once in a while I'll post a video of a curtain speech or something crazy like that. So it's a little extra bonus for the theater lovers out there.
This particular show must be hard to rehearse because everything happens so fast and has to meld together. So how hard do you work these guys?
As hard as the law allows me to.
We were rehearsing before we even got here, out in the lobby. Matt was, okay, go over lines, do this scene. So it's like, please, I just want to eat, Matt. Let me eat.
Again, we started the process pretty early on because I knew how much of a task it would be. So I wanted them to get their lines stored in their memory bank so that the sooner they got the scripts out of their hands, the more we could get into the real physicality of the acting and the bits and the
there's a lot of other things in our hands.
Oh yeah. Props and costume changes and the choreography. I mean, the choreography throughout the piece. There's bits and actions that has to be timed and choreographed to a T. So yeah, it's been a challenge. There's been nights where we just work on one scene and just over and over again drill it into their memories. So
yeah,
our Mr. Memories.
Let's go over the basics once again. Friday, July 27th. At 7:30 p.m., Saturday the 28th at 7:30, Sunday the 29th, 2 o'clock p.m. a matinee. Then we move to August, Friday the 3rd at 7:30, Saturday the 4th at 7:30, Sunday the 5th, an afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Barn Players Theater, which is on the campus of Park University, Alumni Hall, look for the signs, 8700 Northwest River Park Drive in Parkville, Missouri. If you MapQuest, the zip code is 64125, and a number you can call if you have questions, 816-587-0218, or of course, online, as I said, bellroadbarn.com. Also on Facebook.
.org.
I think it said it. Oh, never mind. Okay.
Try both. Just see what happens.
I'll bet they both come up.
Yeah. They both come up, but only one takes you to
one
our
of them
side.
Could take you somewhere that is not for young people to see.
Glad to hear that the barn is back.
Well, thank you for having us. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you very much. Matt Hinches, the director. Dave Fullerton, who plays the role of Richard Hannay. And Jeremy Walter, who is one of the clowns. Is that what you want to go with? You want to come up with completely different character name?
No, in the script, they're called Clown. And I appreciate that's
Clown 1, clown two.
Certainly a title I will answer to.
Okay. Just say I want to be called Jack, and nobody would know the difference. One of those many characters you play may well be called Jack. So.
It could be. Jack Jordan.
It could be. Maybe the milkman is Jack. I don't know.
Yeah, Jack the milkman.
Jack the milkman.
Bellroadbarn.org. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we have lots more to bring your way. We're going to talk about World War I, which is just passed within the story of this play when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare to local theaters. Audiences say they want originality, but do they actually prefer familiarity? If the latter is true, then Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again should catch the fancy of audiences who made the original 2008 ABBA musical a box office hit. All of the original cast members are back, joined by a cadre of actors who portray the characters in their earlier years. The flimsy dual timeline plot doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you think about it hard, but thinking hard isn't what this movie is about. Meryl Streep's role has sadly been reduced to a cameo. But her appearance is still the best thing about this movie. It's a breezy, cheerful lark with plenty of earworm pop tunes that will invade your brain for days after viewing. Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again is the cinematic equivalent of a mirror ball, a cheesy, sparkly distraction. Familiarity also abounds in The Equalizer 2, Denzel Washington's first sequel, the follow-up to his 2014 action thriller that was based on the old TV series. Washington plays a former CIA black ops agent who uses his impressive skills to wreak violent revenge on the people who murdered his friend, played by Melissa Leo. Director Antoine Fuqua punctuates the plot with some well-staged, intense action scenes, but the movie is also burdened with some long, dull stretches. Still, it's got Denzel, one of the few actors who can elevate this kind of sadistic and brutal material. Also opening this week, Makia, When the Promised Flower Blooms, is a Japanese anime fantasy about a peaceful clan whose idyllic life is upended when an army invades in order to obtain their secret to immortality. And Unfriended, Dark Web, is a sequel to the 2015 horror hit Unfriended about the deadly pitfalls of the internet. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
After the Harvest, a nonprofit volunteer hunger relief organization, is looking for volunteers to help pick fruits and vegetables to feed people in need. Call 816-921-1903 or go to our website, aftertheharvestkc.org, for more information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Play KKFI. That's all you have to tell your smart speaker to get the news, views, and music you love. I remember the first time I told my smart speaker to play KKFI. Within seconds, I was listening to the stream. Pretty cool. KKFI, wherever you are. Support for KKFI provided by KC Creates, presenting the 14th Annual Fringe Festival KC, an 11-day adventure in the performing and visual arts, including film, July 19th through July 29th. Performers and creators meet, connect, and engage with audiences throughout a 5-mile footprint of Kansas City's cultural corridors, from north of the river to Westport. Information is available at kcfringe.org.
Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. I am Michael Hogue, your host. We continue on here with the Arts Magazine Show. Veteran newsman, sitting in the chair right across from me, Joe Vaughn. Remember him from KCMO News, for one thing, for WREN in Topeka, KCKN in Kansas City, Kansas, 61 Country. You remember him from there?
WDAF, Kansas City, is 61 Country.
That's right.
Hi, Michael. Good to be with you.
Welcome. Glad to be introduced and not part of the news story. Glad to have you with us. How did all that happen? You got out of KU and into the radio business?
I'd always been interested in broadcasting and got a degree in journalism from the University of Kansas. I like to write. I like to be on the air. And more than one person told me I had a great voice.
Yes, you do.
And so somehow or other that led me to broadcasting.
Yes, but you had a lifelong interest in history, because even when I would see you at luncheons and things, you would talk about this aspect of history.
History, or current events, and political science.
You have,
and there's a lot of that going on right now.
You have written, I guess, 4 books, as
correct,
well as newsletters,
yes,
booklets, things of that nature, previous books. I remember one was about Quindaro. I remember that.
Well, that was a book on Kansas City, Kansas, a pictorial history book that I did for Arcadia Publishing. When you're out in the few bookstores that remain, you'll notice that there are books that the cover looks the same, but it just has a different title for the city. And Arcadia Publishing has now done about 12,000 of those books, and they get someone who knows a community real well. There's one in Kansas City, Missouri on Hyde Park, for example. And the one I did was because I grew up in Kansas City, Kansas. I knew the city real well. I had been involved with the museum and knew where I could get images. They're image intensive because people don't like to read today.
That's too bad, isn't it?
And we're in a generation of digital and verbal communication, not written word. And so I did that book, and it did very well because the people like to look at their pictures of where dad worked or granddad worked, or the stories they'd heard about the railroads, the packing houses, and things of that nature.
Yeah, well, you write these books. I guess you – do you write it with the aspect of this is going to be a hard or soft cover book? Do you write it with in mind that someone might be reading this on their computer or on some other – a Kindle, for instance, some device like that?
They can be modified to be – that way, but most of the books I've been involved with have been paperback books, the 6x9-inch, 128 to 180 page format, intensive on pictures, using a lot of captions. And people are visual, as I mentioned, because of television and iPhones and iPads and all of that today, and they like to see things. And my niche within that is history and current events, politics. Things that either happened long ago or still relevant today.
Yes.
And it's interesting. It's fun. You find out a lot of things that there was an old building right where we're sitting now, 39th and Main in Kansas City, Missouri. It was called the Werby Building. And it was apparently wore out and was taken down, and the building we're in now was built here about 30 years ago.
Sure, yeah. And who knows? This building is going fast.
Another 30 years?
I shouldn't say that. But all buildings have problems.
They do. But some are very artistic and beautiful, and they get to survive for over 100 years.
And the city's done a good job, I think, of saving some of the
quite a few. There has become more of a preservationist interest in society in general. The main thing is getting the funding to restore old buildings. It's quite expensive, and often the artisans, the craftsmen, the people who can do the kind of work the old buildings were built out of, particularly when you get into terracotta and using limestone and mortar and things of that nature, the craftsmen aren't as available today as they were 100 years ago.
Oh, the craftsmanship in some of these buildings is just marvelous. And you're right. Is that going to die out, or is interest resurfacing about some of these things?
It's working both ways. There are a few people who are bringing it back intensely as a special interest and as a niche. But as far as a large scale of people being able to make a living that way, everybody wants to go to Home Depot today or Lowe's and take it home and put it together or have it delivered and have the crew put it up and have it ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunate, I think. You see that Joe has quite the historical background. In fact, this book had to have been sort of a labor of love for you. It's called Colonel Wilkinson's Diary, A Kansas Doctor in World War One. Colonel Wilkinson is actually your grandfather.
Correct, and it came about in the most unlikely way. When my mother died 13 years ago, I was clearing out her house, as a lot of people in our generation do.
Yes.
When their parents pass away. And in her case, she'd been there 61 years and saved even the 1950s Christmas cards.
Oh, wow.
And among many things I found was a U.S. Army trunk. It was a steel trunk. It had Hugh Wilkinson, M.D., U.S. Army. And I opened it up, and inside I found, among many things, a diary. And he would have been court-martialed if that had been found while he was in the service, or the enemy would have killed him. But he kept a diary of his activities, and he was an MD surgeon, and he was assigned to Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. And he writes very plainly in there as a doctor, and I don't think he ever intended for anyone to see this. Many of the people who've been to wars, we know from World War One, World War Two, and Korea and Vietnam, they don't like to talk about their experiences. So he wrote some things about doing stump removal in the surgical ward as a surgeon, and doing bandaging and things like that in very plain language. And so it does make the descriptions a little more interesting than if he'd been the cook in the kitchen, maybe burning the eggs. And medicine then, penicillin, he was there in World War One. Penicillin didn't come out until 1928. And if anybody's been to Washington, D.C. in the summertime at this time of year, it's like a sauna. High humidity, high temperatures. Makes Kansas City even look cool. And there he was doing surgery in the surgical ward with no air conditioning. So then after a time there, he gets assigned to lead a mobile field hospital in France, southeastern France, near the little town of Curel. And he goes over there, and not only are they fighting heat and disease, but the flu pandemic strikes, and then typhoid strikes. And they have several false armistices they have to get the men through, which involves the emotional gut-wrenching aspect of war and the psychological gut-wrenching aspect, because they think they're going home, and then they find out there's no armistice, mm-hmm. and they're back in battle. And on the way over, they stopped in the UK, and one of the items shown in the book that I found in that trunk, amazingly preserved, was a letter from King George wishing the troops good luck. And he would have been the father of the President, Queen Elizabeth, who tried to do an awkward little dance with President Trump recently.
Sure.
In his visit to Windsor Palace. And then coming back, all of the men on the vessel were given a letter from John J. Pershing, Black Jack Pershing, who, of course, was from Missouri, and we know Pershing Road down by the Liberty Memorial or the World War One National Museum. And it was admonishing the men to stand up for the honor of the United States in terms of not getting too rancorous in their behavior of returning home in the glory of winning the war. So
oh, sure.
Kind of a letter you would expect the general to sent out admonishing his men. And one of the interesting things there is we've thought of, in the war since World War II, everything is flown in, the cargo planes and war aircraft in the war zones. Well, there were just very few planes in World War I. That was only 15 years after Kitty Hawk. And it took 3 weeks to get there by vessel and 3 weeks to get back. They didn't have 707s.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting how different the world was in addition to war. But we think of cars today, and we have radio because we're sitting here on radio. And the radio was very primitive then, and it was just a real luxury to be able to communicate in any way.
Yeah.
Language barriers, cultural barriers, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, it really was. My grandfather was a World War I vet, and as you said, didn't speak much of it. I didn't know him very well anyway. I also had a great uncle who had suffered some medical problems in the war. He had breathing problems, and he always said it was because of the mustard gas. Did your grandfather encounter many of the victims of the mustard gas?
Well, his writings don't indicate that that was significant in the patients he was dealing with or where he was. I do know from what I've read of World War I that there was a time when that was a threat to the world, like in our lifetimes we've considered nuclear war to be mm-hmm. a threat. They were going to gas us off the earth and all of that. And unfortunately, that's still used in some war zones around the world right now. But the specific answer to your question would be that he didn't apparently have much contact with it, but that was one of the major threats of World War I.
Yeah, it was. Was it considered criminal in that day and age, or did they not have a war, and it's strange to say it, rules of war that they do now?
They probably, of course, the United Nations didn't exist. The League of Nations would not be created until after World War I, and I imagine the rules were a lot more random than every man for himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think out of that war is why Woodrow Wilson and others attempted to form the League of Nations. That didn't work out, and then in 1946, the United Nations Charter was drawn up. It's in existence today, and I know the United Nations is very controversial, but I don't mind saying my personal theory is as long as you have a group of people talking in yeah. one manner or another, they're just a little bit less likely to start throwing bombs at each other.
As long as they're trying.
Is there some area to... venture spleen, as the saying goes, or to air your grievances. But the UN is very controversial, yet it continues on and serves as a vetting for a lot of the world disputes.
Kind of a buffer zone in some aspects.
At least verbally. Uh-huh. Verbally and in the geopolitical arena. The League of Nations was perhaps too early, and perhaps the right formulas were not put together there, and they learned that, and that's why the United Nations has succeeded where the League of Nations did not. That was also during Woodrow Wilson's administration, and he died, and I'm not as well schooled as I should be on what effect his death may have had in that not working out, but that was a very troubled time after World War I.
Yeah, so it was the Treaty of Versailles, correct? The end of World War I?
Well, the armistice, yes.
Yeah, 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 and some people say that that was kind of a precursor for World War II. You have any theories, or did your grandfather have any theories on
well,
that?
Well, he returned to his surgical practice in Kansas City, Kansas, and unfortunately, he died of a heart attack in 1934. He was only 55, and that was in the Dust Bowl years, the 1930s in the Midwest, when clouds of dust filled the air and there was no rain and temperatures of 110 every day. And again, no air conditioning that we take for granted. And he'd been fighting a grass fire on his farm in western Wyandotte County and came home and died of a heart attack. And of course, there were no EMTs then.
No.
And so even though he was a doctor, it was a much more dire situation. So he didn't leave any record of what he thought, but then he also died very young.
Someone asked me, in fact, it was on Saturday, they asked me, why did they call those gentlemen the Doughboys?
You're in an area I haven't. I do know that the Salvation Army is very loyal to the Doughboy concept for fundraising for World War One because of the donuts that were sold.
Really?
And I think it was the boys who sold the donuts, but I don't know the exact story. Yeah. That's sometime when you have somebody on from the Salvation Army, that's where the focus has been on that. The Salvation Army used to sell donuts every year on the anniversary of that. There's a designated day.
Well, your grandfather, he was stationed in Paris. He worked at a MASH unit. It was called a MASH unit.
I don't know. He was in Curel, which is a tiny town in southeastern France. Honestly, I don't know if you ever saw Paris. Yeah. He was in Curel, C-U-R-E-L. And then domestically, he was at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. And he went in as a major, having been trained at the Command and Staff College in Fort Leavenworth. And it appeared as a youth growing up in Seneca, Kansas, he'd always had an interest in the military. The Command and Staff College is at Leavenworth. Every general of any note, from Pershing and all the way up through Eisenhower and Colin Powell, have gone through the Command and Staff College. It's where the top brass of the military is trained, and it's in Fort Leavenworth, just 50 miles from here. And so he'd taken his training to be a medic and went in as a major. And by the time he left Walter Reed, and of course after France, he was discharged with the rank of colonel. And so he was Colonel Hugh Wilkinson, M.D.
He mostly wrote then about perhaps the day-to-day medical experiences, the surgery. You said he talked extensively about the bandaging and things like
Yes, and he analyzed some of the people he was working with was colorful in his descriptions of there were a couple of nurse ratchets there and people he had to work with who are always trying to stick their nose in. And we know in any endeavor we go into in life, certainly around radio stations, there's always that secretary who thinks she could be a better announcer than the guy that's on the air. And so some of those nurses in the surgical ward got in the way. Then there was one man whom he had an intense dislike for that he called the Army's prize boob. And that's in his copy, and I didn't change it. So he wrote just pretty much what he thought and recalled from his time there. And there probably are not too many diaries. I'm sure there are other people did what he did, but I found this one, and I thought it was worth preserving as a book and kind of a tribute to him for what he did. Right now, the 100th anniversary of the World War One era is underway, 1918. And on Veterans Day, November 11th, this coming Veterans Day, it will be the culmination of that century celebration. And most of the folks listening will know that the World War One National Museum is right here in Kansas City, Missouri. And we always have called it Liberty Memorial, although I think it's now officially known as the National World War One Museum. Mm-hmm. And it is the only congressionally chartered official museum to that great war. And we have it right here in the Midwest. You don't have to go to Washington. Don't have to go to New York. Don't have to go to L.A. It's right here. And it's a beautiful facility. Anybody who hasn't been there, I would urge them to go see it. It's modestly priced compared to many things you can go do.
And we almost lost it a few years ago. There was talk, from what I was told a few weeks ago on the air, that it might need to be torn down. It was too heavy and it might cave in on the bottom part of the structure.
Well, you know, Michael, the sad thing is it almost fell in. Yeah. It was built in 1921, and all of the area where the museum is underneath there, where the Frazee is, faced Union Station, that's all open under there, and about three or four stories in height, which is where the museum is now. But that had been steel, like girders that a high-rise building is held up with. And I guess the Kansas City, Missouri Public Works folks went in there for whatever reason and found that they were all rusty. And that's when about 25 years ago they closed the elevator so you couldn't go up on the tower where there's a terrific view, a panorama from downtown to the plaza and Wyandotte County to Independence. And they had to close it because it was in a near state of collapse. And millions of dollars were required. I'm involved with the Native Sons and Daughters of Greater Kansas City, and we were the first civic organization to step up and advocate for that to be saved. If it hadn't been for a civic group stepping up, I think there was no funds in the city for that. It probably would have fallen into disrepair and been lost. But it's a, not only a wonderful Kansas City area asset, but it's a fine national asset. And going back 100 years when it was dedicated in 1921, that's the only time the five Allied generals were all together at the same time in the same place. Was in November 11th, 1921 at Liberty Memorial.
Yeah. There was a story for a while that they had the actual table where the armistice was solved. But that turned out not to be true.
I think that is correct. Sometimes people's over-exuberance to claim fame ends up being they overshoot their headlights, as the saying goes, and they aren't true. But eventually that does get discovered. But what they do have down there at the museum are tens of thousands of treasures that aren't available to see anywhere else. And as I understand it, that what you see on exhibit there is only 2 or 3% of the artifacts from that war. And the displays are rotated, and what they don't have out at any given time is stored in the Hunt Caves, which is over where Worlds of Fun is in Clay County. And that's temperature-controlled, humidity, climate-controlled, and that preserves things. Some of the film companies, if they haven't digitized their films, used to keep them there for that same reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would keep longer, for sure.
Exactly, because those things are perishable, and once they're gone, almost like Liberty Memorial was, once they're gone, they don't come back. They're one-time-only things.
Well, let's talk about your books, where they can be gotten. Let's talk about the current one, Dr. Wilkinson's Diary. Where is that available?
Well, it's available at Rainy Day in Fairway, one of the last independent bookstore in Kansas City, in Fairway, Kansas. Amazon.com, the Wyandotte County Museum at 126th and State Avenue, Varsity Sports at 77th and Parallel. My good friend Jim there stocks it for me. He also has the Kansas City, Kansas book. And at Unique Finds in downtown Overland Park, across from the Clock Tower, and Mac Hardware in downtown Mission, Kansas, Mac True Value Hardware. Authors like myself and other people who are in the creative industries, we've had to become very resourceful and looking around for places to sell things, because Barnes & Noble, you used to deal with a general manager one-on-one, and they'd take books on consignment. But this time they sent me a 7-page form that I needed to send to New York City. And, of course, Borders is long gone. And some of the stores that used to be very resourceful, some remember Bruce Smith Drugs in Prairie Village, gone. Tiffany Town, Prairie Village, gone. So Amazon, Wyandotte County Museum, Rainy Day, Unique Finds, Varsity Sports, and Mac Hardware.
Yeah, and I assume the same would be true of your previous book, your book about Kansas City, Kansas, and Quindaro.
Yes, that's Amazon pretty much has sucked up everything. Everything is available on Amazon, and pretty much with Rainy Day. Vivian Jennings is a real icon of for authors like me.
Do you have a website you'd like to give out or anything like
that? Well, Joe Vaughn Associates on Facebook, and it keeps the overhead down if I don't have a website, but just about everybody has Facebook and Joe Vaughn Associates there, and be glad to have anyone who wants to be a friend, click that on, and because there will be other things coming out, and from various times I will be making appearances.
Do you have any Are you working on anything?
I'm working on a couple more, but it creates a little greater intrigue if you don't tell folks ahead of time what they are.
Okay.
And
we will fresh it then.
Yes, keep it a little bit more of a mystery.
Yeah. Was it fun writing about your actual grandfather?
It was unique and special because I hadn't anticipated it. And for me, it was the ultimate historic preservation with a personal connection to it.
Okay. Well, the name of the book is Dr. Wilkinson's Diary, A Kansas Doctor in World War One. World War One has become kind of a forgotten war because not that long after World War Two happened, it was indeed not the war to end all wars that many thought it would be.
And unfortunately. Thank you, Michael, for inviting me to be here today.
Joe Fawn, now a historian and author, previously a voice on KCMO News, WREN in Topeka, KCKN in his hometown of Kansas City, Kansas, and 61 Country and probably some other places as well.
And now you and I are both members of the Media Legends.
That's right.
With Pat Patton.
That's right. We certainly are. And we have a lot of fun doing that.
It is. Anyway. Fun to talk to you today. I appreciate it.
It really was. Thank you, Joe. Joe Fawn, author of the book, Colonel Wilkinson's Diary, A Kansas Doctor in World War One. Thanks so much for being with us. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. Sam Wiseman will be here. He'll be playing some of the finest jazz. And in true KKFI tradition, we'll have the jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.